from a motion picture called Old Susanna, which featured Gene Autry and his sidekick from out in Illinois, Smiley Burnett. Gene Autry, as we said, was one of the first to make a fortune at country music. And right now, this portion of the Jamboree, brought to you by C.I. Smith and Company, takes pleasure in presenting America's number one singing cowboy, Gene Autry. Friends, as we move along in our 4th of July country music spectacular, I want to present a gentleman who probably can tell us more about the country music field because he's been in it about longer than anybody who's been successful today. He's been making records since way back in the late 20s. He's been one of the pioneers of country and western music. And in today's music circles, when they talk about a song crossing over from the country to pop field like it's something spectacular, this is a man who did it 15, 20 years ago over and over again. He's not only a great recording artist and one of the first great country stars, one of the greatest record sellers of all times, ranking with Bing Crosby, probably one of the two or three great record sellers of all times. Here he is from Dioga, Texas, Gene Autry.
Well, thank you very much, Don, for that very fine build-up that you gave me, and if I could just live up to all the things that you say about me, I was going to be something, but I'm afraid that that would be almost impossible.
Gene, you've been in the business a long time. You started way back around the late 20s. How'd you get into the country music business?
Well, Don, I guess I've been in country music all my life because I was born and reared down in Oklahoma and Texas, and my mother used to play guitar and sing when I was just a kid, and I took up the guitar about that time. And I also used to sing in church with my grandfather, who happened to be a minister in those days. So I really think that I can say I've been doing country music and country songs ever since that I was a kid. However, professionally, I started making phonograph records back in 1928.
Gene, on the music scene, how did you first get your start? Weren't you connected with one of the railroads?
Yes, that's correct. I worked for the Frisco Railroad down in Oklahoma for about 5 years. And I used to always keep a guitar in the office and practice with it and write songs and do just a little bit of anything I could to keep awake in those days. And one night I met the late Will Rogers. He came in to send a telegram, and he saw the guitar on the table, and he said, "Young fella, do you play that?" I said, "Well, yes, I play it a little bit." He said, "Well, let's hear you knock off a ditty." So I did a couple of songs for him, and he says, "You know, I think that you ought to get yourself a job on the radio." And I didn't pay too much attention to him at that time. In fact, I didn't realize who I was talking to until after I saw the signature on the telegram. And after that, I realized that it was Will Rogers, and later on I got to thinking about it, and I thought, well, if Will Rogers thought I was good enough to get on the radio, maybe I was, so I grabbed the guitar and kind of started out.
You had a mighty good talent, Scott. But Gene, leaving your job as a telegrapher, incidentally, you're still a telegrapher, you're still able at it, or what?
Well, I can still telegraph. I think that I can sit back and read it as fast as I ever could, but when I start to write it down, well, it gets away from me. But every now and then when I walk into some of these railroad stations where they still have a telegraph key around, why, I fool with it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, leaving your stationary job as a telegrapher for the insecurity of the music field, I think you went to New York and auditioned for RCA, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I went into New York City, and I did get an audition with the Victor Company, but it was a little tougher in those days to get on records than it is now. And so I was advised that they thought I should have some more experience. So I went back down in Oklahoma and started working on radio station KVOO in Tulsa. And then I worked in several stations down in that southwest part of the country. And later on then, I happened to be lucky enough to have a song called That Silver-Haired Daddy of Mine. Then I recorded that, and that was the thing that sort of started me off on my way.
And Gene, you went from Oklahoma City to Chicago to WLS to the Barn Dance, and then from there to the movie pictures. Your first movie, I think, was in 1934, and it was a short called The Phantom Empire. Is that right, or what?
Well, that's correct. Of course, in the time I left Oklahoma, I had made several records during that time, and I got a job in Chicago on station WLS. It was owned by Sears Roebuck in those days, and they later sold it, but I worked that. And I worked the National Barn Dance and did about 5 years of personal appearances all over the country in theaters and old fairs and rodeos and such as that. And then then I got a chance to go out to Hollywood, and that was the first thing that I did. It was a 13-chapter serial called The Phantom Empire, that's right.
And it was quite a success as the serials go, and of course the singing cowboys go. What happened to the motion picture business as far as Westerns were concerned when you came along with the guitar? It was a little unusual. It was something brand new, and it kind of put the skids on a lot of the movie cowboys up to then.
Well, up until that time, Western pictures were strictly the action type. In fact, it was very much like a lot of the modern-day Westerns that they call modern that are on television now. In other words, they had about two or three different types of pictures going. They had the Zane Grey series that was made at that time by William Farnham and fellows like George O'Brien, and of course Gary Cooper and Randolph Scott and fellows like that always made more or less the straight type of Western. And then they had the action picture like stars with Buck Jones background and William S. Tom Mix and Hoot Gibson and those fellows. And then when I came along, I guess I happened to be at the right time, as the boy says, with three on when I came up to bat. And they had no singing cowboys. It was something that was entirely different to hit the screen, and I think that's the reason that they started off with such a big bang.
But Gene, you know, in both your motion pictures and your recording, there's a little bit more than luck. I think most of your movies have a family atmosphere, and they have a clean, healthy American girl, and usually a well-intending young boy, and you come along and set him straight. He's a little too enthusiastic for the situation. They always have a real interesting plot, and your records are the same way. Your records always have brightness about them. It looks like it just isn't luck, but there's a lot of selectivity on your part. How do you produce these movies, and how do you get the entertainment that you do out of?
Well, number one, I think that any movie that's made, you have to have a good story, and naturally, a good story requires good casting. The better personnel that you can have around you, and the better actresses or actors are if you have a personality that's real hot around the country, what to use them. I know that my first picture was Tumbling Tumbleweeds, and I did the song Tumbling Tumbleweeds in it, and I always used a sidekick for comedy relief. I used Smiley Burnett for a long time, and then after the war and I started making pictures again, I used Pat Buttram with me for a lot of my pictures, and then we had a lot of leading ladies such as, Virginia Gray, Ann Miller, and Annie Rutherford, and various types of girls that later on turned out to be very fine personalities and very fine actors and actresses. And the story, though, is the one, I think, the secret to it, and then good solid songs that will last for quite a long, long time in the pictures. A lot of those pictures that were made 20 years ago are now being shown on TV, and a lot of the songs, in fact, have become popular for a second time.
But the pictures still look like they were made last week, and the records sound just like they were made last week, too. Some of the songs that you recorded 25 years ago have been brought back again and again. And in this day and age, we were discussing this the other day, music goes up and down. Perhaps the biggest parody on it is the new hit parade is gone a week later. You can't remember who was on the hit parade 6 months later. And if you get a billboard and look back a year, you'd have to be a walking encyclopedia to remember any of the people, but you keep moving on. How do you record songs and have them spectacular enough to sell and keep them from being so spectacular that they don't wear out real quickly?
Don, today I don't know how to pick a hit, to tell you the truth. I hear many different records and many songs, and sometimes I often shake my head. We had a company out in Hollywood, and it was called Challenge Records, and we recorded a tune out there called Tequila. And when I heard it, I didn't think very much of it. Well, of course, you know what it did. It turned out to be about a 2 million record seller. I've always took the position in all of my recordings to try to do numbers that I thought that would last a long time. In other words, I would rather do numbers like Silverhair Daddy, which was made way back there in about 1929. Why, it still sells 35,000-40,000 records every year. And, of course, Mexicali Rose has always been a solid seller for me, and so has South of the Border, and Like Your Tumbling Tumbleweeds, and, for instance, Blueberry Hill. I did that in a picture more than 15 years ago, and it came back again. And I like to do numbers of that caliber rather than a song like The Music Goes Round and Round, or Yes, We Have No Bananas Today, or something like that, and it's gone, as you say, a year later, while you never hear of it anymore. And I think that's the secret of trying to stay up there a long time, is to be sure that you have good, solid material.
Gene, you did something right at the height of your career in the motion picture industry that I think was about as brave a thing as you could do. You quit the motion picture business, you went into the service, you didn't accept any special favors, you became first a private, then a PFC, and I think you were finally a sergeant. You didn't ask for any special favors as far as entertaining. You did some entertaining. You probably could have stayed over here and did nothing else, but instead you went over and flew over, I think, the Himalayas over in Burma, and you had a mighty commendable service record. Today, Elvis Presley's in a position something like you are, and of course, a lot of people wonder what effect it's going to have on him. How did you feel about giving up your career? Was that what possessed you, just patriotism?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's exactly patriotism any more for me than it would be for some fellow out here that's working on a farm. Naturally, when you're at the height of your career in any kind of entertainment, or even, well, we would say a personality such as Ted Williams or many others that are in baseball or football, it's always a gamble because you never know what can happen to you in the 2 or 3 years that you have to go. On the other hand, you can take some fellow out here on the farm, and maybe that he wouldn't show as big an income or anything as a movie or a radio personality or a big baseball player, but being away from home 3 or 4 years probably to his family is just as important to them as it would be to the guy that makes $1 million a year. So you've got to take that in stride. I think what's fair for one is fair for all. When I went into the service, I felt that I had to go in sooner or later anyway. I was about 35 years old, I guess, and I happened to be a pilot before the war started, and I was qualified to fly. And so I enlisted in the Air Corps because I felt that I could do better and do a better job there than I could anywhere else. When I first went in, they did use me in public relations. They did a lot of special service work, or had me do it rather, to entertain a lot of the troops, put on shows in different sections of the country, and they used me for war bond sales and such as that. However, that was not what I wanted. I really wanted to fly, and so I did get over into the flying end of the war with the Air Transport Command, and finally I did come out then as a flight officer. You're speaking of Elvis Presley. I think that from what I have heard of Elvis Presley, he's done a fine job since he's been in there. I think that he's been handled very well. I think that he has asked no favors, and he took it right on the chin. In fact, I can say this much, that for a fellow like Presley, or whoever it might be, I think it's tougher on him than if he was just John Doe, because everybody's watching. And if he does get a few special breaks, why, they say, well, our boy didn't get that, so if anything, it's tougher for him. But I think that when he comes out of here, that he will have gained a lot. At least he will have gained the respect from all of his fellow buddies that have served in the service, and I think that probably that he will have had 2 years of experience that will make him a lot more mature than when he left here. And as to what his career will be when he returns, of course, is always a guess. The type of thing that he did like rock and roll, it could be washed up by the time he gets back. However, I'm sure that he has learned enough that he can go with the trend of the times at that time and do very, very well.
Gene, to wind up our interview here on the 4th of July, as one of the truly great entertainers in the music field, not just in country music, because it wouldn't be fair to limit your activities, but in all fields of music, where you've had records like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which have become standards, and records that have sold millions and millions of copies back when there were no top 40 promo stations, no big organizations to push records, and no people to really get out there and hype them like they do today. Looking back over a career that spans a quarter of a century or so, looking back over a fantastic success, what do you think are the biggest contributing factors to your success, and what do you think lies ahead for country music?
Well, I think that country music has been and Old Kentucky Home and Swanee River and all of those things have lasted through many, many generations. I kind of feel like the fellow does about him. You know, rock and roll may come and go, calypso may come and go, but the good Lord's going to be here forever, and they're going to sing about him. And I feel that country music is some of our native heritage that will be going for many years to come, and it may be done in different styles with a different beat, but I still think that country music is here to stay.
Do you think it's your sincerity that's made you so successful, and just your moderation?
Well, I've always tried to do everything that I do, whether it's pictures, radio, television, or what. I tried to do it to the very best of my ability. Sometimes, why, it might not always turn out that way, but I always do the best I can to select the right material, and of course, there's no one in the world that can do it, I don't believe. You might start off with something that you think is fine, and it doesn't turn out that way. But I don't know of any artist that wants to just make a record just to be doing that, because that's a waste of time. However, we all make mistakes on that. I do think that when you're honest with yourself and you're honest with your part that you play and honest with your audiences that you work to and always keep your entertainment on a clean, level basis, why, I think that any artist, regardless of who it might be, I think he's bound to have some success.
Gene, thanks a million for being with us here on the 4th of July, and thank you for your time and consideration in our interview, and good luck to you always.
Well, thank you, Don, and it's been awfully nice to have been here with you, and to all of my many friends and to your friends, I want to say thank you for the way that you have supported my movies and films, television, radio, and records all these years. I hope that I can continue to bring you the type of entertainment you and your families will enjoy as long, at least, as I'm in the business.
Thank you, Gene Autry.